taxation number 12287, Real 2.
This is Trubant, Real 2. So, do I understand that the whole of Königsberg was destroyed by this bombing in the summer of 1944?
The damage was considerable. They were firebombs, mainly. And the damage was considerable.
And you didn't use aerial shelters, you just used cellars?
Our own cellars, yes. Yes, we did have that. And I remember being terrible. Of course, we all were very frightened. We tried to save what we could. I remember as children also, we went upstairs to the attic where the fire started and tried to do something, but there was no way. And we tried to get certain things still out. And I must say that a lot of farmers came out with their horse and their wagons behind. And I remember for some reason or the other, we got our piano out, which was completely useless to us, and other things we didn't get out. But in the panic, you don't just think properly, and the farmers gave us their name and a certificate what they had saved.
At that time, in the summer of 1944, the Russians were... had a big offensive to the west. Did you and your family think that the Russians would get into East Prussia?
Well, we hoped for some reason. There was always this talk about a new wonderful weapon and so on. And of course, you always try to think positive that they could have been held. And I think we all hoped that we still could hold them. But there was no hope.
Did you see German soldiers going to the front?
No. Of course, we had a lot of young gentlemen we were friendly with. They were drawn in too. And in the end, they took elderly men. My father was never in the army in the Second World War because they needed him for the customs. So he was never involved. But right at the end, when I already escaped from East Prussia with a refugee train, I understand they came to my father and said, "You were a young officer in the First World War. Take these old people, take these people and fight the Russians." No weapons were given. My father only had a side dagger, no boots. These high boots which the army wear, and I understand the day after he came immediately in Russian as Russian prisoner. He was taken on the and taken to the Isle of Hela.
When did your family decide to get out of Königsberg?
Well, after the bombing in September 1944, they arranged a refugee train, and we didn't know where to, but there was panic. We realized that the Russians were coming much closer, and my sister, my middle sister, who had a 7-month-old baby, was supposed to go and didn't want to go alone. I still had a contract with the opera house. They wanted me, as the others had escaped, to take on the ballet as I had a solo contract, but they understood that I needed to go with my sister and the baby on this refugee train. Now, that took several days because we were always interrupted by bombing at railway station. We had to stay outside. The conditions were terrible. We could only take very little. And the toilet facilities were really not existing. So we had a little pot, and that had to suffice. we managed to put everything out of the window. In the end, this train halted in Aue, which is between Leipzig and Dresden, which we never heard of. And we came into a school, we were put on straw to sleep there, and my sister developed a horrible cold in her throat and wanted immediately to go back to East Prussia, but I prevented her from that. We were then billeted in private houses with people who were kind to us but really didn't want us, because they said, you had so much food during the years of war while we had all the bombing and very little food, and now you come and eat our little food. So there was a little hate on account of that.
Which month would this have been?
That was in, I think it may have been end of September 44.
And this was in Saxony?
Saxony, yes.
What happened to you then?
Well, from there we could see, when they bombed Dresden, we could see the fire, and unfortunately we realized that a lot of tracks from East Prussia were at that time going through Dresden, and as you know, a lot of them were killed, and also Dresden was fairly well destroyed, but then there was war on, so you understand that. I had to go into a factory, but into the office they put me to keep records of their tools.
Where was this?
That was in Aue, because everybody had to work. And I think now it was a little electronic firm. Not a little, it was an electronic firm. And after the war, I realized that they found the radium for the atom bomb in Aue. And when the Russians later on occupied that part again, I must first say that the Americans came in when 45 in May, the war was over, and there was some sort of agreement with the West that the Americans would leave that part, and it was given to the Russian occupation, which was rather tragic for us.
When you saw the bombing of Dresden from a distance, about how far away would you have been?
I'm not terribly good in saying in kilometer or mileage, but I think there was even Leipzig was as much away as. I should have looked that up. I'm sorry, I can't tell you exactly, but it wasn't far because we could see the fires and heard the noise of the bombing of Dresden.
Did you realize it was something exceptional, or did you think it was just another air raid?
No, we realized that because we could always hear every day. Our wasn't bombed. We used to go in the mountain and in the hills, and even during the day you could see the British coming over, and the American, I would think, as well, and the roar was terrific, but they never touched our. They were more going to Leipzig and Dresden.
Can you remember the first Allied troops who came in? First American troops who came into our?
Yes, we can, because it was very extraordinary. Before they came in, the day before, we were by the marketplace and the German troops were on the withdrawal, and suddenly an officer came up to me and said, "You are Siki," and he was the son of a doctor friend of my parents, and he said, "Look, we have to go. Here is a little chocolate still left for you, but we are withdrawing from here." And it was wonderful to see him. And I don't really know what happened to him afterwards, if he was caught by the Russians or not. We never heard. Then after that, the Americans came in, and no, I cannot really tell you if the Americans came in. I think that I'm not 100% sure, but I know that then it was said that the Russians would come in that afternoon and we should make us like old women and wear headscarves and not put nice clothes on and hide in the cellars. And from our cellars we watched mostly Mongolian on their donkeys and little horses, the smaller horses, coming in. And of course we were very, very frightened. And as soon as the Russian administration knew that I was a ballet dancer, they formed a theater group which toured the area. And we just had to do that and play for the people and perform for the inhabitants around. And every night we got the pass that we would come late back because there was a curfew on. And every other commandant always locked us up in cellars because they wouldn't recognize the other commandant's pass, that we could arrive home late. So it wasn't an easy situation. And therefore, in 48, I decided, after my sister had gone a few months earlier, to creep over the border into the West.
How did the Russian troops behave in Aula in practice?
Well, we kept well out of their way. They were occasionally wild, could be on a footpath, and they would come with horses, perhaps a few drink in them, and they just would gallop along the footpath. You would never know what happened next. But as a whole, I had no other problems with them because I didn't have an awful lot of dealings with the Russians. But in 48, I crept over the border, which was very difficult, again leaving everything and just a rucksack, through the wet fields. And you had these towers, these watchtowers, and I came over by the cellar border.
Did you get any help to cross over?
No, not going over that time. I was alone going over.
How did you know where to go?
Well, because other people, my sister had done it before, and there was quite a little exodus. But so we knew exactly where to come and where to cross over and how long it would be. But I happened to have a very, very wet, dewy night. And you had to crawl occasionally in through the fields and walk through the high cornfields and got completely wet through. It wasn't an easy way. But on the other side, we were helped. And my sister had escaped before and had settled in Hamburg, so I knew where to go.
Did you cross into the American or the British zone?
Into the British zone.
Was there any danger from guards or mines or barbed wire?
The Russians? Yes, of course. You were in danger all the time. You could have been shot.
Was there a barbed wire fence?
There were barbed wire fences you had to go through. And there were towers where they watched also. So you had to go at night. And once or twice we heard some Russian calling out that they had found some people, so we had for quite a while to hide. I say we, because in the end I found one or two others. But somehow I think, although I'm not a terrible religious person, who's crossing the border, I think somehow God helped me, and I'm not a particular brave person of a night and in darkness, but somehow or the other, all that was lifted off me, and I felt that I would do it.
Was there any danger from mines?
Oh, yes, yes. All the there were mines and fences. Of course there was danger, great danger. And a lot of people were also robbed if they were found of their belongings, and sometimes perhaps from own Germans that happened as well.
Who robbed them?
Oh, occasionally it was Germans also who robbed some people who did. I heard that. It didn't happen to me.
What was life like in East Germany from 1945 to 48 for you?
You mean in East Prussia or an hour later on?
In the Russian zone.
In
Germany.
In the Russian zone, it wasn't easy. There was very little food left. My elder sister, who came also to our later with my mother, because they realized we were there, they had a terrible time. They only left late February to get out, and she was heavily pregnant, and her daughter was actually born. By the marketplace was the hospital where her daughter was born, and the German soldiers which came through had to throw all their weapons on a big heap. And she said she always remembers this noise of the weapons being thrown into a big heap, and the Russian receiving the Germans.
What were living standards like in the Soviet zone?
Well, we had rations, and there wasn't an awful lot of food. And I made myself with a cushion one day. I went to a shop, and there was a long, long line of people queuing for food, for rations. And I thought I'd get some for my sister as well, and put a little cushion under myself. And I was nearly attacked because some of the others realized it. I wasn't pregnant. They had known me. And I had to retreat. But I tried to get them a little bit more food.
Did the German communists take over?
Oh, yes, yes, they definitely were there, and they were the worst ones. And it was one of them with an armband on who was very, very nasty to me at the time. And I got away without a beating. Yes, they did take over.
How did the German communists behave?
Not very well, because they were suddenly then on a high, and one tried to keep out of them altogether, because even the friends in our, they weren't very happy that they had so many refugees. So you can understand that when there's only so little food left, and now they suddenly had to share that little bit. And like you, I suppose, in England, we had to go in the fields and find little things for our soup, little green plants to make soup out of it, and we were really very hungry. As a ballet dancer, the Russians were sympathetic in that way, and we got little extra ration, but nothing more than that. We still were very, very hungry. We got a little extra bread.
Because the Russians liked ballet?
The Russians were, yes, very much for ballet, yes.
How were you received in the British zone when you crossed over?
Well, they were helpful. They put us on coaches and or on trains. And we were, like you have the WRVS, we were given hot drinks. and I knew where I was going to, so I was pleased I arrived, because in 48, when the change of the money came, what we call the Währungsreform, the devaluation of the German mark, we thought, unless we gradually go over, we will be forever in the Russian zone, and which proved true. And there was a director, we call them intendant, he came from Berlin, and he had known me, and he said, look, I'm in Flensburg, it's only a small opera house, I can only pay you very little, not as big as we used to do, but we are a good standard opera house. Would you like to come with solo contract? And that's where I was very pleased to come into Flensburg, which is by the Danish border, but German, which was occupied by the British.
How were the British behaving in the British zone at that time?
Very well, yes, very, very well. I think they realized that the Germans were always friendly with the British. We have so much in common, historical. And I immediately took English lessons. I forget now what this cultural institute was called. British Council did arrange for English lessons, which I took. And actually, I met my first husband in Flensburg, who was the education officer for that part of the CCG. He was never in military because he had polio and one leg was slightly withered. But that's where I met my future first husband, whom I only married then in 52 in Vienna, when he was connected to the British consulate. But no, it was like heaven to be in Western Germany and under the British rule.
Where did your husband come from?
He came originally from Guernsey, which made me come later on to Guernsey. He was Southampton born, but his mother was Guernsey. And so he was born in Southampton, but brought over 11 years old to Guernsey.
I think, going back to Königsberg in 1944, that you had some white Russian ballet dancers come and visit you.
Yes, that is true. And we had trained and many, many hard days of work to perform and give a beautiful ballet evening combined. And these white Russian ballet dancers, I always remember the women. I was 16 and the women were absolutely terrific. They were 40-ish and they were fantastic ballet dancers, and it was a pleasure to combine with them, and the men were also terrific partners. And on the evening of our premiere came direct the order from Berlin that we had to cancel that evening, and we were all terribly disappointed, and I remember we fell in each other's arm and cried about it, because we had very, very hard worked for that and looked forward to that performance.
What kind of a standard were these Russian ballet dancers?
Much better standard than we ever could be. I don't think we were, to start with, as classic as they were. And they were really absolutely fantastic. And it was a wonderful experience to dance with them.
What were you going to perform with them?
Various classical Tchaikovsky and various classical ballets.
You must have been in Königsberg when the famous July plot occurred against Hitler at the Volkskanzler. Do you have any memories about what happened then?
Well, we all hoped that it would be the end of the war, and we were terrible, terrible disappointed that it didn't come off. Because it did happen in East Prussia, in Rustenburg. And I think the officer who plotted it, actually, and was later on beheaded, was originally an East Prussian.